Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome, everyone, to another fantastic episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 113. I'm Marcel. I'm joined by my esteemed co-host. To my right, I got Jason E. Alt.
Marcel, stop trying to make fantastic happen. It's not going to happen.
What's wrong with that? I mean, Corbin, isn't fantastic like the new thing to say?
I would not say fantastic, and I'm a big fan of Mean Girls, so... If you don't have support for me, you're probably not getting support.
I know Ryan's got my back. Come on, Ryan. You got to have my back here, right?
I mean, no. Sorry.
Wrecked. The tribe has spoken.
Oh,
yeah.
You're being evicted
from the island. I don't know what's all on the island, but you're off of it.
Well, there's Fetchlands on the island now, so there is that. It happened.
Fetchlands?
We talked about it on the cast. We said it would. Khans of Tarkir has allied fetch lands.
Yes, the best thing ever. People were mad and people were happy. And
did they laugh and they cried?
They cried. They did. They gnashed their teeth. There, people on the East Coast were probably particularly very upset because the fetch lands, the spoilers came out, I think, 10 o'clock West Coast time. So
and
you had to stay up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had to stay up till like 1 a.m. on the East Coast. So like, I caught it because they did their initial PAX party. So everyone's got the oversized cards and they're taking the pictures and they're tweeting those. And then later on, they unveiled, Sarkhan Vol, the new one, the Planeswalker. And then people thought that was the big thing. And then all of a sudden later on, Fetchlands come and then there's a mad frantic dash to Modo for the next 20 minutes while I try to get rid of all the Fetchlands I had early.
I mean,
did you manage?
I managed. I mean, I didn't maximize on, I did great. Actually, I did really good, especially for how much I bought them for like a year and a half ago. Like I made out like a bandit. I got enough to basically be good in standard for the rest of the year. So
I think, I don't think that anyone was surprised that Fetchlands were reprinted because it's something that everyone knew was coming eventually. I do think some people were surprised that it happened now, even though there were some signs of it, you know, not having allied colored lands at M15, Obnixilis that triggers on players searching their libraries, in retrospect is kind of a plant. So, you know, there were some signs if you could see them coming, even though they were fairly difficult to read, but now it's here. And I think it's, you know, now that the shocks went off or whatever for the people who did have old copies, it's pretty much all upside from here. So let's move straight into Finance 101 then, cause we want to talk about this at Finance 101. We've got obviously a lot to get to this week with the spoilers coming in. Finance 101 reprints. You know, talk in the general terms, you guys, what it means for a card to be printed and what it typically does to the price of those cards.
Well, it really depends. So what we're seeing with the fetch lands is immediately the onslaught fetches, their price kind of tanked a little bit online. But if you're really worried, if you had them, you didn't manage to sell them, I think what you're going to see is that the Onslaught ones are going to have about a 20% premium over the Conslaught fetches. And I think if you want to see that mathematically represented, a good thing to look at is the Ravnica versus Return to Ravnica lands. Those shock lands in Ravnica are worth about 20% more than the Return to Ravnica counterparts. A reason for that could be people preferring the older border. But I think another reason for that also is because the ones from Return to Ravnica are so much more common. You had, you know, them being offered in multiple booster boxes. You had them being opened a little bit more because there are more players in the game. And you had the Modo Redemption going on. So all those factors contributed to there being a lot more Return to Ravnica Shocklands. And that increased rarity has made the Ravnica ones a little bit more appealing. So if people are looking to, you know, put them in their cube or play versions in EDH and they want the best version possible, you're getting about a 20% increase having Ravnica versus Return to Ravnica, and you see an even better multiplier on the foils.
Jason, I have one question for you.
What is that?
Did you call them the con slot fetches?
Yeah, I'm that's what I'm doing.
That was adorable.
I thought that was pretty clever.
Yep. I can't even argue. Like, I wanted to be mad about it, but I can't.
So, I mean, basically reprints are, you know, to kind of keep this 101 base, reprints are a fact of the game. They happen, especially given that, you know, Wizards wants to keep the barrier to entry of Modern down. So things like this, you know, the Shocklands, the Fetchlands, things like this are going to be the norm moving forward. Even if they, you know, there's obviously going to be years in between, but it's going to happen. The only thing that will never be reprinted is the stuff on the reserve list, which is, you know, power and the original duels and stuff like that. That stuff will never be reprinted. So in terms of protecting your card's value, in a sense, the only thing that will ever truly be safe is the reserve list. And I think that that's something you just have to be aware of going in. It certainly doesn't mean you shouldn't do things like pick up fetch lands or anything like that, but it's just, you know, something you need to be aware of when you're getting in and getting deeper into Magic.
That's right. So if you're worried about the price of Aurum Samite Healer from Tempest Tanking, don't worry, it's on the reserve list.
So the other thing to know about reprints is that they're not all created equal. For instance, there's a giant difference between printing, you know, allied fetch lands and cons, or printing Thoughtseize and Theros, than there is to printing, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptor in a From the Vault 20, or printing Master of Ethereum or something in a dual deck. I think that just because something's been reprinted, and that even includes things like buy box promos and things like that, pre-release cards, those are all reprints. But basically the reprint that will most devalue a card's worth is when it is put into a regular Magic set, and in particular if it's in, you know, that fall Magic set where it's just the most coming in at once. So it's pretty important just to be aware. There's a lot of printings of cards that you may not even know about. You know, I've met a lot of people who don't actually know that there was another printing of Prophet of Kruphix in the Clash pack, or they don't know what was in an intro pack and things like this. It's something to keep in mind, but basically the specialty products don't have near as much of an impact on a card's price as reprinting it in a standard legal set does.
And on Modo, there'll be reprints. I mean, you'll get stuff like Vintage Masters, which is Modo specific, but there'll be another type of reprint, which will basically be a flashback draft. And these happen occasionally on Magic Online, especially coincide when they have the huge draft, which is right before the set release. They'll have a flashback draft, which will be older packs from a different set. And while this is being drafted, those cards will tank. Not horribly, but they'll go down, you know, 15 to 20, 25%, somewhere in that range. So that's a good time to get rid of your cards beforehand sometimes, if you're not playing with them, and picking them up for the cheap after during the time that those drafts are going. So that's a thing to keep in mind as far as, like, Modo reprints.
All right, so let's move right into the email this week. We've got one from Mark Darmond, who has written for Brainstorm Brewery. He's got some pretty cool stuff in the backlog there if you want to go check it out. He says, "Hey, guys, I recently got back from GP Portland with my first set of Judge Foils. I've got a Vindicate, Show and Tell, Fluster Storm, Doubling Season End, and Tomb. Looking around at the GP, the buy list for the cards was about 150. When I got home, I just was delivered my Judge Foil promo Full Art Lands, which are beautiful. Those were selling at the GP for around 600 and are going on eBay for about 400. I'm curious if cards like this tend to be better to hold onto until they rotate out of the promo program, or if the rise in price is slow enough that they'd be better off investing the money into cards more likely to fluctuate faster. I can't imagine them going down in price too much, but will they tick up enough that they're worth holding onto?" So this question is, you know, the way judge packets work is the promos are given out to the judges at GPs, or they get mailed them with the lands, and it happens for, you know, a set period of time, and then it rotates onto something else. So his question is, does the price really go up on them a lot after they rotate out, or do they kind of, you know, just stay where they're at? So, and should he put that money in something else? So what do you guys think?
So it very much depends on the judge foil, and a lot of times you'll find the cards that are really hyped right off the bat will tend to stagnate or even sometimes go down in that first year, as opposed to the cards that are really, like, underwhelming right off the bat. tend to have the biggest upside to hold on to, just because eventually people will go, oh, this was in a Judge Pack 2. I still want this card. Like, that doesn't change. But it's not, you know, it's not a Force of Will. It's not these. Like, I think the lands have room to drop, as opposed to some of the other cards in the Judge Pack right now have room to grow. So, like, there are some that are worth getting rid of immediately. Overall, though, if you really don't want to mess with, like, looking at individual ones, just hold on to them each for about 2 years, and you'll see growth.
You almost have a bit of a Quick in the Dead scenario. So when the Judge Packs are first given out, you've got a few people that are getting them a little bit before everybody else, and they're the ones that are getting $600 at the GP. Then you get home, and every other judge, you know, that was busy working the whole weekend and, you know, didn't get around to listing their stuff until they got home, that's who's getting about $400. So if you don't want to be in that group that takes way less than the people who listed initially, as the price starts to normalize, because everybody brought their packet home, you know, all at once, and they're clamoring to get theirs sold and listed. If you wait a little bit until not everybody's trying to list at once, there's going to be fewer online. And I think there's a definite benefit to not being in that initial crush of people who just got awarded theirs. So if you can't be one of the very first people to list, I think you actually do benefit by waiting a little bit. You don't want to be part of, you know, a huge gang of people undercutting each other and racing to the bottom. If you want to list it when they're a little bit rarer, you could probably get a little bit of a premium just because a ton of people aren't listing. I think they're, that a lot of those cards have the potential to tick up over time. And honestly, I think I would wait and see what happened when they rotated out of the program, because we've seen the price tick up a little bit on some of the other cards that have rotated, especially if it gets a higher degree of adoption and legacy. Like when we saw cards like Show and Tell that didn't get played as much and then got played a lot more in multiple decks, that really shot up. And the people that sold as soon as they got their packet kind of didn't get as much as they could. So I think there's a benefit to waiting and seeing what happens. I don't think they're going to go down precipitously.
All right, let's. We got one more here. I'm going to reach back a little bit for this one. It's from several months ago,
but it's not a bad time to pull it out. All right, this one's from Jared Birdsong. He says, hey guys, but primarily the Magic Online expert Marcel. I'm relatively new to Legacy, and as we all see the dual lands fall, this was, you know, around the time of Vintage Masters. He says, I want to get into. I'm ready to move in on Bayou, but I'm curious if buying in on the cheaper duels is a good investment. They're so likely. Are they cheap because less decks use them, so are they even a good prospect? Thanks for all the content, Jay. So, I mean, this question's from a little while back, so why don't you just tell us, Marcel, where you're at, and Ryan, because I know you follow this too, where you're at on dual lands right now in the Legacy, Vintage, you know, Eternal format on Magic Online?
I like to buy all the duels you can get. They're as cheap as possible right now. I mean, yeah, they have been since, you know, basically since he got this email, the prices really haven't changed much. They are the same.
So, I mean, what do you expect them to do over the next, if it's been 3 months and they haven't moved, you know, when do you expect them to move?
Well, the Vintage Masters is still being drafted. So, like, that stops with cons, right, Marcel?
Yeah, I believe that stops right around cons, so that's soon.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I have to feel like that's your breaking point.
Yeah, so right about now is your time to pick up as many duels as you can, because they will basically just go up. I mean, you get Plateaus for, what, $280 right now? You can get Badlands for $4. Yeah. They got Bayous for $8.
That's crazy.
Underground Seas, the highest at 20. You got Tundras at 16. You got Tropical Islands at 14.
What were these cards before Vintage Masters?
Tundra
20
was 50,
to 60?
50. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like 20 was your Plateaus?
No, Plateaus were, no, I think Plateaus were like 10.
Oh, were they that cheap?
Yeah, they weren't super expensive, but still, I mean, this is
so we've seen like 400% drops on stuff.
Yeah, but those were also the other ones. Those were from the Masters editions, and those prices have held in a little bit better. Like, they're not nearly as low as those cards are, because people do prefer the older ones, an old border, especially me. Like, I made sure to get all my, the older ones, because I prefer the old border. Just like I'll buy back the Onslaught Fetches after they drop.
Right.
They'll probably be at a premium, but I prefer a border by a long shot.
I suppose I should call it a 75% drop and a 400% rise. Get my math right there, but yeah.
So, I mean, but yeah, like, and a lot of everything in Vintage Match is a good time. If you haven't got your power and you plan to play with your power, now it's your time to get it, because it'll just go up. Yeah, I guess this is a good call for everyone. If you're thinking about playing anything, Legacy or Vintage, buy your cards now, because you've been told.
I was just going to say, like, yeah, a lot of us missed the boat one time on Legacy. Don't let it happen again. Like, this isn't going to be any different than what happened in real life. Like, these cards will continue to go up because people are going to play Legacy. And I've had so many people locally, like, selling a lot of their Legacy collection and just toning down, like, one deck and turning a lot of that into Magic Online money and being able to buy it in there. Because, like, you can always find a game. So I expect that to continue, and I think once it's done drafted, we'll see price spikes fairly quickly afterwards, actually.
All right, so let's move into the big news a little more on the fetches. What are these going to mean for Standard, for Modern? What is the future?
A lot of shuffling. Oh, my God, there's going to be so much shuffling. All the games are going to go to time. It's going to be the worst thing ever for Magic.
That makes every sense. Day will be
shuffling. Yeah, terrible. That makes sense, yeah.
I mean, I do agree. I honestly, like, my honest opinion is, like, they should have banned fetches in, Modern because of the shuffling. I think the shuffling is bad, but now that they're here, like, you just gonna have to, it is just part of what it is, so just deal with it.
I'll say this. I think that it, you know, and I don't agree with that on Modern, but in Standard, I think that fetches in Standard create more shuffling, and that's not ideal. I don't think it's necessarily a giant problem. Until you add in the card Courser of Kruphix into every single deck. And now people get to play with it where it's not always correct just to crack your fetch at the end of their turn and start shuffling, and you can kind of save some time in between turns there. Now you want to see what's on top. You want to see what you're going to draw. You're like incentivized to save fetch lands when you have enough mana already. It's kind of like playing Brainstorm in Legacy to a much, you know, to a smaller but similar effect.
Sensei's Divining Prophet.
Yeah, like this could create some slow board states. On the other hand, it makes, like, obviously it makes Courser a lot better, which is why we saw the price move, you know, like we thought it would.
It's also, people got to keep track because it's not a May ability, so everyone's got to keep track of that life gain. And this could be a nightmare, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to remind your opponent to gain life. But you do have to make sure that you get their life gain so that you don't have life total discrepancies that require a judge call.
Yay.
But yeah, I mean, on the other hand, we didn't get a 4-mana wrath, but we got a 5-mana wrath.
It's actually pretty sweet.
Quite good. It's very good. It's going to be just another way to deal with, creatures that have other creatures bestowed upon them. And if we get some better equipment, it would be a good way to deal with that as well. The one equipment we've seen seems only good for EDH. That's the Throne of Tarkir. I don't know how much that's going to impact Standard. But, you know, if we get some better equipment, it'll be a good way to deal with that as well.
So the fact that there is a Wrath kind of cuts down on, you know, that nightmare scenario of the Block Pro Tour where every deck is Sylvan Caryatid, Courser of Kruphix, Sphinx, Prognostic Sphinx, and games last forever, and people gain a bunch of life, and now people have fetch lands to make their turns last even longer. At least that won't, you know, that won't be the reality.
Yeah. I'm really disappointed, actually, by this Wrath, because Mono Red is always a thing, and these fast aggro decks are always a thing when the 4-mana first comes out, and giving us a 5-mana Wrath means we're probably not getting a 4-mana Wrath, and I think that's terrible for this format, quite honestly.
Well, they said that they don't want to do 4-mana Wraths anymore. They want to do 5-mana Wraths with upside.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cute, but I don't know. I see problems. I think that we're going to see, until people figure out, I think it's just going to take longer for the control build to get there, which I guess isn't really bad, but I don't know. I think it's frustrating.
They've got to lean on anger, like, the 4-mana right? Wraths. You gotta lean on Anger of the Gods now, right? To survive. Well,
Anger doesn't kill Courser though, and like that card, I don't know. Like I feel like Anger's not fine. Sure.
Courser's
like,
not part of an aggro strategy.
Right, but you don't want to be playing Anger main deck if it does nothing against the decks that are just Courser decks. What is what I'm saying, I guess. Like, so do you want to be boarding your Anger of the Gods in? Cause like, then you just auto lose those game ones where you need Anger.
And how are you gonna get double red and double white without Arid Mesa?
And how is red gonna, I don't know, but while we're talking about needing to beat the mono red or whatever, how is red gonna beat Caryatid into Courser every game? Like,
they're not, they're just gonna, it's a stonewall. Like what they were saying about the 4-mana Wraths was bad against mid-range decks. It actually hurt those more than they hurt the aggro decks. Because that's you can't, so this will actually, they're saying this will help open up the game and allow more creatures to stay on board and create more interesting board states per se.
I mean, it's gonna be, it feels like the format is going to be between these mid-range decks, two control decks, you know, wherever on that spectrum they fall, that are, you know, Courser, Sphinx, Trilands, Scrylands, and then your like Fetchland, Mana Confluence, Painland decks. I see that kind of being where the line breaks down.
I think Corbin's just upset there's a 5-mana Wrath because he wanted people to play Whelming Wave.
No, man, I want people to play Aether Spouts.
I think people still will play Aether Spouts. I mean, it won't be as played for sure, but, I mean, that card seems fine.
Mm. It's pretty bad against all the Bestow creatures in Mono Black compared to the 5-mana Wrath.
That's fair. Oh, I forgot about Mono Black. There's a deck that it's relevant against.
All right, so let's talk financially with the Fetchlands. Jason, you know, touched on where he sees the Onslaught ones going. Where do we see the cons Fetchlands settling? You know, a lot of them are like 18 to 20-ish pre-sales right now. Where do you think they're going to end up in a few months?
10 to 15, right? Like Shocklands. And on Modo, you're probably going to see them some sub 5.
Well, I think that there's some key differences between the two.
Yeah. Like,
for one, Shocklands are not at all relevant in Legacy. Fetchlands are. There were more Shocklands already on the market than there were Allied Fetchlands because, you know, they were printed more recently.
Mm-hmm.
The block structure is different, which I think will be a wash because of the extra supply in Dragon's Maze. Kind of balances out the extra pack that Khanza Tarkir will have in relation to Return to Ravnica or Gatecrash. So I think all things considered, mainly the Legacy demand, I think that they will end up a little higher than Fetchlands. And in paper, I think the Fetchlands will end up a little higher than the Shocklands, because the Shocklands were basically 7 to 12, depending on which one. You know, when I think the Fetchlands will be that 10 to 15 instead.
That sounds fair.
I think if they get above that, Moto Redemption is going to enforce a lower price.
Yeah.
Because if your Moto Redemption set ends up worth $200, then people are going to do a lot of it. You're going to see an increased supply, and that's going to put negative pressure on the price. So I think the fact that Moto Redemption can, to an extent, enforce a lower price means it probably won't go above that $15 mark.
And not only Moto enforcement, but, you know, if the set in general just has enough expensive cards, it becomes profitable for dealers to just crack them and sell the singles. So when your cycle of five, like, you can't have five $20 lands and anything else in the set have value and it not just be opened until that balances out. So I don't think they can go much higher than like maybe 16, 17. I think the 10 to 15 is much more likely.
So if people wanted to get these as cheap as possible, when do you think is the time for them to buy them?
Peak supply. Demand's not going to change, so it would be peak supply. You know, these are going to get these will be drafted in booster packs alongside the second set on the block. So peak supply will be after, you know, Moto Redemption's in full swing and, probably right before the second set comes out, although you'll still get more copies injected in the market by people drafting the packs.
So about January, February, or December, January, that range?
I think so.
I mean, if you wait a little bit longer, I don't think you'll pay a ton more.
Yeah, and the other thing I think that's good to note, now that we're actually can see it, we'll get to the Zendikar Fetchlands in a minute, I'm sure, but a lot of people will be like, especially if they don't get them right off the bat, are going to be, oh, well, I just wait till rotation to get mine.
No.
Well, right. I mean, with the Zendikar Fetchlands, they dropped 6 months, 8 months a little before rotation, just like the Shocklands have. At rotation, they did not move at all. And we're seeing the same thing with the Shocklands, where they're basically the same price they've been for the past 2 months. They're not as high as they were 6 months ago, but they're not going lower. So I think if you think you're going to wait for, you know, 2016 to get your Fetchlands because you missed out on drafting them or whatever, that ship will pass you by and not come back around. So it's just kind of an advance warning of how these are likely to play out over their life in Standard.
So what do you guys think about these affecting the Zendikar fetch lands? I mean, there was a big conversation we had on Twitter, and you're saying there's people saying that we will not see the Zendikar fetch lands in this block, or possibly the next large set, which will be part of this block but drafted separately. I think that's false, and the logic behind that was that these will give enough of a supply that it will alleviate the pressure on the Zendikar fetch lands. But I still don't think they're complete substitutes. I mean, they're complementary substitutes, but they're not complete substitutes, so that's not going to be all the way. So you'll see the Zendikar Fetchlands dip in price, but I don't think you'll see them nowhere near where these are going to be landing. What do you guys think? Where do you think this is going to happen with the Zendikars?
I mean, for every Zendikar land you're pulling out of Modern and putting one of these in of, right? Like, you're adding one more to the supply. So it's certainly got to go down some, as because there's no extra demand for the Zendikar fetches now. But I don't think it's, I don't think that it's going to be enough to really drop it so much, because we've already seen that initial drop. People are already scared of this reprint. So we've already seen these prices go down already. So I don't think we're going to see it too far affected. And honestly, about the time they're reprinted, they're going to be right about the price they should be while they're in standard anyway. So I think it's kind of a wash.
Are you talking about, Zendikar Fetchlands, Ryan?
Yeah. I mean, they're not the 70 to 80 they were there for a while when they were ridiculous.
Right.
And they already dropped down some. And then with these reprints, they've dropped a little more. So I don't think, I think there's going to be, yeah, sure, a little bit less demand, but I think that the market's already kind of adjusted for that, knowing that not only were they going to be reprinted, but the other ones were probably coming back too. Like, I don't think we're going to see this huge, you know, fall off of Zendikar fetches.
So
at least not until they're reprinted, and once they are, it'll fall, but it's not gonna crash down. Like, I don't think we're gonna see 25% of the price or even 50% of the price. I think it'll hold a little better than that.
So what you're saying, and I think I agree with, is that, and this goes right along with the Onslaught Fetchlands buy prices from dealers dropping months ago because they were worried about a reprint coming somewhere. So the time for the Zendikar Fetchlands to drop is not now that. It's not just now that your cons ones hit the market. They've already dropped, like Scalding Tarn dropped $30 from its peak because people were expecting a reprint of either Zendikar or Onslaught. So, I mean, I think they'll dive over the next month or so because, like, you know, Birthing Pod, for instance, will want to play the green Windswept Heats instead of, you know, something that doesn't fetch a Plains and a forest. So you definitely see them go down, but I think more important than the cons fetchlands on the Zendikar fetchlands price will be the Zendikar fetchland reprint, whether that comes in Cons of Tarkir or whether it comes in Modern Masters 2 or whether it comes somewhere else. That will be the next, like, really precipitous drop in those prices. Either way, I don't think that there's much upside to them right now. That's for sure.
So do you think they're going to be reprinted in this block? Do you think it's going to be Modern Masters, or do you think it's later?
I mean, Modern Masters is probably my call at this point if I had to. But I don't think it's really relevant. I think either way, unless they're mythics in Modern Masters, like, you're not going to see these prices hold. So, I mean, Corbin's right. Just get rid of them if you can, trade them out. But at the same time, I think they've already dropped enough that you shouldn't feel like you need to buy list them necessarily, because about the price you buy list them for, I feel like is what you're going to be rebuying them for if you need them for standard. So, I mean, if you've got them and you think you're going to play them, hold on to them. If you don't, trade them out.
Yeah, Marcel, I think I'll say this with the caveat that, you know, it really doesn't matter in a sense. Like, we know a reprint's coming somewhere. It doesn't matter whether it's Modern Masters 2 or Cons. I don't think they'll be – I think they're more likely to be in the small set, Fate Reforged, than they are in the third set, which we know is going to be called Dragons of Tarkir. The reason being that, you know, we know they don't like shuffling in standard. Cons and Fate Reforged rotate out 6 months before Dragons of Tarkir with the new block structure that comes out
that makes a
next
lot of
year.
Sense. Yeah.
So why put them in the third set? Like, sure, it makes more sense to put them in the other large set, I guess, for the idea that, you know, just balance. But that means that they have an extra 6 months of fetch lands in standard, and then you don't even have all 10 fetch lands. I'm of the opinion, and this is what led me to predicting allied fetch lands and cons in the first place, is that their goal is to balance the mana across standard for allied and enemy colors, not necessarily to balance cycles. So we saw the enemy colored pain lands with no counterpart in M15. Now we see the allied colored fetch lands and cons. So you actually have the same amount of enemy colored fixing and allied color fixing, and it's balanced. And then you add in the fact that the Zendikar lands, since there's more of them than Onslaught ones, maybe they don't need quite as large of a reprinting, and you can see them start to fit into a Modern Masters sort of thing. And so that's my thoughts on it.
Ooh, they got new spoilers. Did you see this new one? See the Unwritten?
These are going to be very old by Friday.
Oh, damn.
Right.
Like, everyone's going to be like, oh, great. Tuesday spoilers. Thanks, guys. Cool. Yeah, cards from Tuesday. Well, glad I listened to Brainstorm Brewery to get all the Tuesday spoilers.
Yeah, they could eat a dick, too. So this
I mean,
one,
that's my feeling in general.
This is a Ryan card.
This card's cool.
Yeah, it's 4/2 green for a sorcery. Reveal the top 8 cards of your library.
Oh, I'm in.
Yeah, no, this goes in Maelstrom Wanderer.
No, so this goes in Eldrazi.deck, man.
Oh, man. Yes, it does go with Eldrazi.
It's a summoning trap. It's a summoning trap that sometimes gets two cards.
Summoning trap was insane with Eldrazi.
What does this card do?
So listen. Read the card. All right, so you reveal the top 8 cards of your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield. Put the rest into your graveyard. So 7 other cards into your graveyard, feeling whatever madness you got going on. But it also has Ferocious. So if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, you may put 2 creatures into the battlefield instead of 1.
Oh.
2 Eldrazi, bro.
Oh.
Yeah, this goes in Maelstrom Wanderer right away.
This is Ryan's card. Oh. All the way.
Oh.
It's a mythic.
It's a sorcery, though?
Yeah.
Yes.
It is. It's a sorcery. Oh.
It's like probably not as good as Summoning Trap, but the upside's a lot.
It's 10 cards. It's a pretty big difference from 7, actually. Like
It's 8.
8 cards? Oh, they said 10.
Why are we talking about this on the podcast?
Because this card's sweet.
Yeah, we got to talk about what we
have
like.
Fun.
It's not finance. We just did like a whole bunch of just boring finance shit. Just talk about the good stuff now.
Well, let's talk about how Ankle Shanker is the best name for a Magic card ever.
I haven't seen this card.
Oh, okay, it's a new one.
Yeah, I haven't either.
It's Mardu. It's 2 colorless and then Mardu.
Which is
tell
what?
Me what that means.
We are not there yet, Jason.
Tell me what
nerds.
That means.
Red, white, black. Okay? Uh-huh. So it's 2 colorless, red, white, black for a Goblin Berserker. He's a 3/3 haste. When Ankle Shanker attacks, creatures you control gain first strike and death touch.
Ooh.
Pretty good with Goblin Rabble Master, if you ask me.
Yeah, you do not want to block.
A lot of
speaking
mana.
Of Rabble Master, isn't there some enchantment that's pretty good with him, I heard? I haven't actually checked spoilers.
Yeah,
today.
There's this one. There's the Ascendancy? No.
Which Ascendancy?
No, that's not it.
The Mardu Ascendancy is whenever a non-token you control attacks, put a 1/1 red goblin on the battlefield, tap and attacking. So I don't know how good that is with Rabble Master.
Yeah, that's not that great, actually.
Can you really remember the shards already? Wedges?
No.
Yeah,
I'm trying.
Rug is Teemer.
I've got Abzan.
Abzan is junk.
Jeskai is American.
White, yeah, Jeskai is American. The red, black, white is Mardu. And then the bug is Sultai. Yeah, Sultai, because that's the charm. That's the only charm we've seen. So that's Sultai. So yeah, we got the wedges down.
We'll get there. Everyone's going to get there eventually because we're going to be rolling off of our tongues in a matter of months.
Yeah. Do you really expect us to memorize 300 cards and not 5 words?
Words are hard, man.
Well, yeah, words are hard.
They do mean things. That's for sure.
Well, they also got some cool, the generals, I guess, for the clans. Oh no, the cons for the clans.
They're all bad.
I don't think so. I think I like the Blood Tyrant.
Anafensa is actually better in Standard than EDH. I think Anafensa, if people are going to be playing Delve, if they're going to be doing stuff with Jace, I'll just read the card. It's green, black, white for a 4/4. So it's a, you know, 3-mana 4/4. That's pretty solid for mid-range. And Junk is the mid-range color. When Anafensa the Foremost attacks, put a 1/1 counter on another tapped creature you control. So it, you know, you benefit by swinging with multiple dudes. If a creature card would be put into opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. So that's going to keep people from, I guess, making some sort of weird dredge deck with Delve.
Well, yeah, Delve.
So I don't really see that being that great. It's definitely not a general in EDH, but I don't know if putting one counter on a creature and having to swing with two of them is that great in the decks that are doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The one that I think is the best general for EDH, we haven't seen all 5, we've only seen 4, but Narset Enlightened Master is actually, it's just bonkers. So I'm just going to read that one too. It's 3 colorless, blue, red, white. It's a 3/2, first strike, hexproof. When it attacks, exile the top 4 cards of your library. Until the end of the turn, you may cast non-creature cards exiled with Narset this turn without paying their mana cost. So this is bonkers. People are already saying, what if this is your only creature and you play it with Proteus Staff? So you sack Narset, you go through your whole deck until you get to the very bottom of your deck, right? And you're like, okay, I'm out of creatures. So Proteus staff says, put all those cards back in any order. So then you get to order your library, and Narset goes back on the, you know, into your, I don't know what Proteus staff does with it.
It puts it into play. It's polymorph.
Oh, that's right. It puts you put it on the bottom, and then you go through till you hit a creature. So you put it back into play, and you get to order your library. So then when you swing again, you get to pick the four cards you get, and you put all the land on the bottom. So this, you know, you could have cards in your deck that keep this from getting tucked, and it's going to be hard to tuck it with Hexproof. People are talking about building this Voltron. People are talking about the Proteus staff shenanigans, blinking it. Like, I think it's going to be pretty sweet. So that's the one I'm excited about. I think just jamming auras on it and serving with it and getting a bunch of value is going to be pretty good. Ways that give you additional attack phases are going to be good with it, and those are in red. So I think the other two were Zergo Helm Smasher is pretty good. We've all seen that. That's been out for weeks. And they spoiled Sidizzy Blood Tyrant this week. It's a colorless, a black, a green, and a blue. When it enters the battlefield or attacks, put the top three cards of your library into your graveyard, and then it has a trigger. One or more creature cards are put in your graveyard from your library only. Put a 2/2 black zombie creature token on the battlefield. So if all three of those cards that you mill are creatures, you only get one trigger there. You only get one zombie. So it's also a 3/3 for four, which is not great if you trigger by attacking with it. Like, you have Damia and the Mimeoplasm in those colors. I don't know why you'd ever play this.
All right, hold on. Let's stop. This is all EDH. I think this is the card that's going to be making the most impact in Standard, actually. Like, you're going to see a graveyard theme, and this is going to be a...
Do you think it's a Dissy?
Yes.
The 3/3 for 4?
Yes.
Oh.
Are you kidding? With the... You're creating black zombies and...
Yeah.
Have you seen Utter End, Marcel?
This is like...
No, he said out of
like
all
it's at least four power.
Oh, okay.
For four mana.
Actually,
or five
power? On Anfensa, yeah. So I think it's going to be those two fighting it out. Zergo Helm Smasher could see Standard play. I'm not really sure. Narset absolutely will not see Standard play.
Yeah.
Whatever, man.
It could. These all have potential too.
Okay, so like, here's one of the theories I have on this is that a lot of people, I've seen the comment that, oh, this set doesn't look that great, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we talked about Theros being kind of a power reset for them. And everyone expected, oh, now we're having multicolored cards. That traditionally means really powerful stuff. But you have to remember that they also put Morph into the set. And they probably want Morph to be relevant. And if you're having to pay 3 mana to get a 2/2 creature to start with, you have to slow down your set to make that even have a chance of being relevant in Standard. Because it's just so... you know, traditionally underpowered in what Standards look like the last few years. So
that's true.
I don't.
That's why they gave us a Berserker that costs 5 mana.
Berserker.
I don't think Morph. I think Morph was maybe meant for the limited, and you're not going to see as much of an impact on Standard.
Yeah, but the same thing still applies, right?
You may see a Morph deck. You're not going to see multiple Morph decks. So
it's not going to be a Morph deck. It's going to be a few
Morph creatures.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like when Morph was around before, there wasn't a Morph deck. There was people playing
Exalted Angel. Yeah.
The same concept applies for limited too, right? Like your limited has to be slow enough for Morph to be relevant. Otherwise, everyone's going to hate Morph.
Otherwise,
cards.
You're going to die with a face-down Sagu Mauler instead of taking over the game with it.
Well, I mean, you also, it's three colors, so it's going to be slowed down just by nature, unless they got perfect mono
fixing. Right, exactly.
You know?
Right, so. But like, I think that's, you know, I'm not upset with the cards being quote-unquote underpowered, because honestly, if Theros was the same way, then Standard will be fine. You get stuff like Utter End, which is a really cool card. It's the 4 mana, 2 colorless, black, white, instant, exile target, and online permanent. So it's not like this whole set's just going to be this terrible, slow thing. Like, there's cool stuff regardless. You know, so I don't know. I like them slowing it down, which it seems like we don't just have these ridiculously overpowered cards.
I love Utter End. I think it's a little bit more, if you wanted to play Esper, it's more castable than Hero's Downfall. And it's got additional utility.
Yeah, like, I like it too. Read it to people. Cause...
I just did.
Yeah.
Oh, you did. Oh.
read it to Marcel.
I was looking at this mythic bird
Marcel,
that comes into play with
Utter End is two colorless.
Eat it.
Black and white, instant, exile target, and on land permanent.
It's like Vindicate, but better, almost not as good.
You can't hit land.
It's not going to replace Vindicate in Legacy.
No,
but honestly, I wouldn't want a card that was good enough to replace Vindicate and Legacy
exactly.
in Standard. I wouldn't exactly. want to play Standard during that time.
Yeah. So I do have one thing to note on this. I had a couple people I noticed posting things about how Heroes Downfall seems a lot worse now. And I don't really agree with that. I think these are probably – I mean, there's certainly decks that were going to run Heroes Downfall that may put the nod towards this card. But at the same time, mana efficiency is still a thing. And there's not a lot of permanents now that, like, Detention Sphere stuff are rotating that you care about that aren't – like, the Exile is relevant at times, especially if we're going to have a graveyard theme. But I think there's still going to be decks jamming Heroes Downfall just because, A, you don't always want to be black and white. And also, at the same time, you're still looking at more mana efficient, and it deals with most of the permanents that you want to deal with this anyway.
I like how everyone keeps saying graveyard theme. There's going to be six cards with Delve.
No, we're getting a graveyard theme. I'm sorry. Like, this, it's going to be a mini theme in this block for sure.
I'm with you, Jason.
It's going to be some Sultai cards.
It's going to be
Delve.
Most Sultai cards. Is going to, it's going to fit in right into it. Necromancer stockpile is going to be a pit. You should pick up your Necromancer stockpile.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going that far.
They're 8 cents on, they're 8 cents on Moto.
I can taste the gun barrel right now.
All right. I'm in a blue pill.
Don't take the blue pill, Marcel. Come on.
First of all,
it's 10 cents. 10 cents on Moto. You can't go.
Jason, you probably shouldn't say that. That might be offensive.
Why? Robin Williams hanged himself.
Oh, God, no.
He didn't shoot himself. Come on.
No. Second of all, I'll tell you why people like you guys are hung up on this graveyard theme. It's because it's very linear.
You want Chase to be good.
And it's very linear to say, oh, we've got some graveyard cards. I need to build this deck that abuses the graveyard without stopping to consider whether or not abusing the graveyard is actually more powerful than just casting other cards. It builds, it's very linear, and that's why it draws you.
Conley Wood has brought Stockpile to the Pro Tour. I mean, the card has value in it.
Ryan's saying, because he's like, there's going to be a graveyard theme based on the plus one ability on Jace that they may or may not have spent time testing.
Yes.
And now that there's Delve, it's like, I was certainly right about a graveyard theme. There's a graveyard theme because I said the phrase graveyard theme months ago, and now it looks like I was right.
I bet you guys the Celebo deck will be tier one or tier two deck.
No. I'll bet
Fogo. Fogo bit
no,
right
I,
here.
I will. I'm in with Marcel on this one. 2v2. Like, you cannot say graveyard theme all you want, but it is. There will be a graveyard.
I don't
want
to make this bet.
Stop saying graveyard
theme.
There are cards with Delve. Stop saying graveyard
theme. It's not just, you have
the
souls. That's another aspect of the graveyard. It is graveyard theme. There are multiple things happening with your graveyard. There are things that you're putting into your graveyard. There's the 4-mana 3-3 guy.
There's the Pharaoh reprint incoming. Yeah.
There's the 4-mana 3-3 guy that when you mill cards, he's putting 2/2s into play. That's also a graveyard thing. There's like a ton of stuff going towards that. It's not just one or two cards.
Now, I understand the word. I understand what you're saying. I'm not making this bet unless we have very clear parameters on what graveyard theme means.
Hold on. Ugin's Nexus goes to the graveyard.
Oh, no, you're not. No, it doesn't.
It gets
exiled when it goes to the graveyard.
No, it doesn't. If it would go to a graveyard, it gets exiled.
It says graveyard. Graveyard.
Graveyard.
The theme is card graveyard. Graveyard.
Yep. Okay, I gotta see it through my lens. I see
how
everything.
How much more clear can I be?
Speaking of Ugin's Nexus, which is the whole MTG Ryan Strikes Again thing, this card's really sweet in Commander, by the way. I'm gonna sack that thing into a trading post all the time in Shroom.
You're not
all
getting
the time.
It
you mean once?
No, yeah. I just mean multiple games. Like I'm
or
gonna
I'll
go search this thing out.
I'll make
copies
of it with Steel and Mizzium Trans Relic Wind, and I'll make it into a copy with Tezzeret, and then copy it with Rite of Replication.
If you copy it and sack it, then you don't get your extra turns unless you sack both of them at the same time.
It's legendary. The legend rule will take out all of them.
Jason, that's not how legend rule works.
Yeah, it's no longer. You only get a key.
And the first ability on it prevents you from taking extra turns with copies.
So you would have to sack both copies at the same time, and then
well, with a trigger on the stack, yeah.
No, you get to.
No.
If there are three, you
keep
two of them? I think you keep
one.
You
sacrifice
can't keep
two.
Any of them, Jason.
But if you sacrifice two of them, you don't get to keep any of the extra turns if you have one into play.
Yeah, the first ability.
You don't think Shroom's got ways to get rid of it?
Well,
no, that's
the whole
saying.
Point. You have to get rid of them both at the same time. That's
but
not
it doesn't
the point.
Matter. Their abilities would never trigger because of the other one being in play, and the legendary rule, there's no stack on it.
Well,
so you would never get a chance to sacrifice it to like get all three triggers.
Well, you're no
you
fun.
Just don't get the extra
all right, let me tell you exactly how you'll do this coming from a Shroom player. If you have two of these in play because you copied one, you sacrifice one to the legend rule, your extra turn goes onto the stack.
Yeah.
The ability on this does not trigger until you would actually begin that extra turn. All you have to do is sacrifice it, the second one, before that turn ends, and then you get two turns.
Yeah, it says you can't begin an extra turn. No,
it doesn't mean the ability can't go onto the stack.
Yeah, you'd have to sacrifice it while the ability is on the stack.
No, you have don't. To you just have to sacrifice it before the end of the begins. Turn.
Yeah. Oh, it doesn't. It's not right away. Okay.
No. So, yeah.
I thought the card just said you couldn't take extra turns.
That. Yeah. You are right, Corbin. I'm wrong.
It's so the card is sweet, right? Yeah. It also like hints at the Eldrazi, which works with the green card, Seed the Unridden we were talking about. Blah blah blah. Graveyard theme.
Wow. Graveyard theme, guys.
Hey, so do you think that we're really not going to see any of the gods now that we got Udder's End? Because we got a Deicide, Udder's End, and...
I mean, is Deicide just awful now, right? Like,
Deicide seems way worse than just playing Udder's End, I guess.
Like, I don't see a deck where I want Deicide.
Have black in your deck. To
play. Like, here's the thing, Marcel. Like, I don't think that this card stops gods any more than Banishing Light does. Or any more than Deicide did, or like this card is just going to be good catch all. Like, are people are still going to play Planeswalkers and you're still going to play gods? Like,
Hero's Downfall hits artifacts now.
Hmm. Yeah.
So now what about this Sorin, Solemn Visitor?
Oh, I like this guy a lot. He's a spicy.
I actually like him less than the other Sorin.
I do. I agree with you.
He's almost identical, except. His minus
only worse.
Yeah,
he's a better his
minus,
dragon.
His minus protects himself. Are we talking Sorin or Sarkin?
Sorin.
Oh.
No, okay. Sarkin is sweet.
Yeah, Sarkin's good.
Sarkin is sweet.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. I don't even remember what Sorin does.
Okay, Sorin does. Here, Sorin's two and a white black for four loyalty. This is similar, right? Or was three loyalty on the other one?
I think it was three on the other.
And so for a plus one. Until your next turn, creatures you control get plus one and gain lifelink, which is actually, if you got a lot of tokens, it's pretty powerful, but you need a lot of tokens. Minus two, you put a 2/2 black vampire token with flying into the battlefield. And then for -6, you get an emblem at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep. That player sacrifices a creature. So basically an abyss on your opponent's upkeep. And that's -6. Interesting thing is, after you up this ability once, then you're two turns away from ultimating.
That's the only reason this could be, like, really good, right? Because, like, I agree, the other Sorin was better because you could just play it in these decks where, like, the fact that the plus ability makes a guy on the other Sorin rather than the minus is huge.
And
the lifelink kind of kept, the lifelink kind of kept you along. I mean, this card's probably not bad, and the minus two is, you know, reasonable enough that it could get played, especially while the format's kind of small. But I don't think it's super powerful, like long term and standard.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be worth as much as the other one. But if you're building like a Super Friends type deck, I don't think he's great in that, and that's kind of where you'd want him.
Yeah, that's where the other one was really good, in those kind of control decks where he just clogged the board up and built.
Yeah.
Gave you emblems that were the best thing ever.
I mean, unless there's a deck that really needs the lifelink and can also get enough creatures in play to utilize the lifelink and wants to play this planeswalker over another planeswalker, like, that's a lot of ifs to make this deck playable to me. I mean, I like him in theory, but I don't think he's actually going to be good.
I think he's going to be at every price point where you could compare it to the other Sarkin, like at that point in time, I think he'll be cheaper. Or the other Sorin.
Except for the dual deck reprint, maybe.
Okay.
So you want to talk about Sarkin, so let's talk about Sarkin. That's the guy that you want to talk about.
Sarkin is sweet.
Read it. Read it.
Yeah, okay. Ryan.
I got to pull it up. No, I don't have
somebody who can read. All right. Yeah. Three colors. Yeah.
I don't want to do
this. Three colors and two red. He's got four initial loyalty. His plus one says, until end of turn, Sarkin the Dragon Speaker becomes a legendary 4/4. Dragon creature with flying, indestructible, and haste, and lifelink, and hexproof, and he's Chromantic Orb. No, it's just it's flying, indestructible, and haste.
And if you ever saw the trailer for this, they did for the Khanza Tarkir. When you see him turn into a dragon, that's actually really cool.
Minus three, Sarkin the Dragon Speaker deals 4 damage to target creature. Very nice. Minus six is you get an emblem with at the beginning of your draw step. Draw 2 additional cards, and at the beginning of your end step, discard your hand. So he gives you an emblem that is the card Grafted Skullcap.
Grafted Skullcap's only one extra card, right?
Yeah, I believe
so. The big talk is, you know, is Sarkin better than Stormbreath Dragon? Does he obsolete Stormbreath Dragon?
And I think he's better than Stormbreath Dragon, but I don't think he's obsoletes it by any means. You know, Stormbreath Dragon has protection from white. It doesn't get attacked on your next turn, you know, and like lose because of loyalty. Obviously, Sarkhan is much more versatile and has a much more powerful upside than Stormbreath Dragon, but there are, and you know, I'd much rather have him than Stormbreath Dragon in all likelihood, but I'm not completely counting out Stormbreath Dragon.
I disagree. I think in decks that want to play Stormbreath Dragon or that are playing Stormbreath Dragon, he may be Stormbreath Dragon number 5, but he's not going to replace Stormbreath Dragon just because he is vulnerable when he is being attacked.
Right.
He's legendary. Stormbreath Dragon, the protection is there. I mean, there's monstrous on Stormbreath. There's a lot of other things. I think that he plays good in a deck that's more, say, a controller shred. So if you had it's a different deck than wants to play Stormbreath, and then he may be a focal point of that type of deck.
I mean, but does he not seem good in the green red turn 2 Caryatid, turn 3 Xenagos, turn 4 Sarkhan, turn 5 Elspeth, whatever deck, like that deck from the Pro Tour?
Yeah,
like,
I think it's good.
That deck played Stormbreath.
Yeah,
and like that was the main home for Stormbreath.
Yeah, I'd say you still want to play Stormbreath over this.
Really?
Yeah, for the role, yeah.
Maybe. Like if you're like planning on playing with Xenagos, Xenagos kind of protects him. Like he comes down, he bolts a creature, like your Caryatid blocks something. Like
I think Stormbreath is better.
Deck, right? That's the Stormbreath Dragon deck.
Yeah, so. I think he's number 5. He's Stormbreath Dragon number 5. Right, that's my opinion. That's just my opinion. So I could be wrong, and you can find out.
But
later.
It just seems like the ability to go Xenagos, Sarkhan, Elspeth is like insane. I don't know. We'll see. Definitely good.
There's also merits to like your opponent doesn't get a chance to. Oh no, they do get a chance to respond to that. Never mind. I was going to say they can't Heroes Downfall him right away, but they can. But now with like the new Heroes Downfall, Exile is just as relevant. So yeah, there's not really an argument there, I guess.
I really think it's the versatility that will push it over the top of Stormbreath in a lot of decks.
Yeah.
Well, it could get Utter's End, and Stormbreath can't get Utter's End.
And that's very relevant.
That's true. So. Yeah. I always forget about that Pro White.
So we'll see. That'll be the debate. We'll find. We're not players, so like, why are we debating the merits?
Hey, Ryan's a player. He's grinding this year.
I am. I'm going to work on it. We're getting there. I should quit not playing Magic.
We're at it, shout out to KYT. He won his PTQ. He's not going to Hawaii. He's not going to Hawaii. Oh, that sucks. But you know, he's going to be out there on the Pro Tour. Make sure he crushes it. Hopefully get more podcasters out there doing the thing. And also, again, shout out to Scotty Mack. He'll be at the Community Cup in a week after this podcast. So
it was awesome to see KYT finally get there after, you know, working at it for so long.
Yep. Dedication. So Ryan could do it. He's going to be the grinder. I'm going to try to put my little foot forward. Hopefully I can follow through with that. We'll see what happens.
Did you guys want to talk about the new bird, the Archangel card? It's basically our. Yeah, I mean, all right. So this is one of the other mythics we have. 3 colorless, 2 white, 3/4 flyer. It has raid, which is the abilities of one of the wedges. It's whenever it enters the battlefield, if you attack with a creature this turn, put a 3/4 white bird creature token with flying into play. And it has whenever wing mate rock attacks, you gain 1 life for each attacking creature. So it's the same base stats as an Archangel of Thune. With different abilities. Basically, man, for 5 mana, if you attack, you get a pair of 3/4 birds, and then it has this additional life gain ability on it.
It's a mono-weight Broodmate Dragon, and Broodmate Dragon was very good.
Yeah.
But it didn't see standard play, no, despite.
Yeah, it did.
Broodmate
very
Dragon.
No, what are you talking? Did you play that card?
Yeah, that card was like huge in
Marcel, Broodmate never, Dragon? No.
Broodmate was a windmill slam and
listen
junk.
To me. Broodmate Dragon was the win condition in 5 color control for a long time until whatever it was came out that like replaced it. Baneslayer, I think it
Baneslayer,
was.
Baneslayer, yeah.
Well, Broodmate Dragon was the go-to win condition for months in the best standard deck.
Okay, so I'm sorry. What I remembered, it never made any money because I had a bunch of copies and it never went anywhere.
That didn't happen, but that was because it was also
it was
like a
free
promo,
Walmart
right?
Card, yeah.
Yeah.
That Walmart promo was expensive for a while.
So that tainted my memory of what I remember about the card.
Now, the second year it was in standard, it probably wasn't as impressive, though it was still good in Jund.
So this is a 5 mana Broodmate Dragon with 2 less power, but you have a life gain ability.
and less mana. Broodmate costs 6.
Yeah. 5 mana Broodmate. It's
3 different colors, and this is 1 color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty playable, I think.
So you could say Broodmate's almost a 7 drop, in essence, whereas this is a solid 5 drop.
I mean, this could be
the time. At the time, it wasn't. Like,
yeah, this could be the not over Prognostic Sphinx.
Probably 2 different decks, I think. Uh-huh. Like, I feel like this is in more of a mid-range deck, and Prognostics, I think, is where I want, like, my control deck to be.
Yeah, because Prognostics things is when you're a few creatures that you want, and this one you need to have other creatures.
On the one hand, it's basically the bug deck that really played Prognostics Sphinx, and that deck didn't play white, obviously. On the other hand, this does outclass it, because Prognostics Sphinx cannot kill the birds, and it cannot race the birds because of the life gain abilities, so...
True. One more thing of merit too, Corbin. I think you're even more correct with them slowing down the format some more. Cause, Outlast as a mechanic would be completely useless if it's really fast.
Oh yeah. Pay a bunch of mana and tap your guys a sorcery.
It's sorcery speed. Why is it sorcery speed?
I don't know why Outlast is sorcery speed. It's really awful.
They probably tested it at instant and it's probably nuts at instant.
I'm telling you, man. I'll tell you why. It's a common. It's an ability on commons in draft. And it would be too complicated if it was a combat trick.
It would be way too complicated. Yeah, they couldn't.
I guess.
New World Order stuff.
It would be a Kabuto Moth.
Because not only do they boost up their life, but then you also get this cool ability, and then you got to count the fact that you might have one coming to play.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's the one that gives them first strike. Like, it would create some very complicated combat math. So, you know.
Yeah. And whatever. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Fair. I just feel like that mechanic, really powerful card to make me want to play anything with that mechanic on it.
At the same time, like, it does seem like he gets out of hand in limited, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and limited.
it's a repeatable growth effect on every card that has it.
All the guilds aren't going to be playable at all times in standard. There's going to be ups and downs for all of them.
Yeah. It's just really disappointing to see, like, an entire mechanic that's pretty much not constructor playable in, like, any way, shape, or form.
Well, I felt the same way about Ravnica Guild.
I felt the same way about Prowess until they spoiled a second card with Prowess on it. Like, we can't say that. There could be a ridiculous Outlast card.
That's true.
It'd have to be, like,
one. It's like it's Outlast abilities, you gain 5 life or something like that. Or you put a counter on every creature.
It's just that, like, the amount that you have to put into a card to make it playable because it's sorcery speed like that is so much more than something like Prowess. Like, there's going to be Prowess cards that are middle of the road that could be playable. There might be, like, one Outlast card that's playable.
Right. I mean, that's fine.
Prowess, like, we've already seen the Dragonstyle Twins are ridiculous. Like, I brewed up a whole EDH deck based on Tibor and Lumia just when I saw those cards.
Yeah.
So, Dragonstyle Twins is nutty.
The thing is, like, not every mechanic has ever been constructed playable, you know? Like, yeah. Look at Ravnica, like,
yeah, the quite a
things
few.
That didn't really, like, Scavenge, like, never really got there, like, Dreadmangler was a thing for, like, a minute. But anyways, like, I'm looking forward to drafting this, because my first set that I really played was Shards of Alara. Like, I came in a little before that on, like, Shadowmoor, but didn't really, like, get into it until Shards of Alara, and it was so fun to draft, like, a guild, you know? Like, oh, I went this guild this week, because everything was so multicolored and all of that. And I don't know if it's just what's been spoiled so far. I'm seeing, like, a lot of things that aren't, you know, straight, 3 color. And I think it's just what's been spoiled. I'm looking forward to it regardless. Like, I think it'll be a lot of fun to play, even more so than the guilds were.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I have a greater affinity towards the wedge colors than I do for the shard colors. Like, something about them just grocks me as a player. I think they look like they just look better together on the cards, and yeah. I don't know, something about them, they feel right. And
this is my favorite color combinations. Like, 2 of these are my favorite color combinations comparatively to shards. I didn't really care.
I guess I didn't have a strong opinion. I do like junk a lot though, so I mean,
that's one of my favorite. I didn't like Bant going into it, and then now I like Bant because of shards. But red, green, blue is definitely my favorite 3 color combination. So I don't like that Teemer seems a little mid-range and dirtily. You know, it's getting all the 4 drops and stuff like that, but I think there'll be stuff to like.
Is that Sultai? Did I get it right?
No, Sultai
is... You just said Teemer.
Yeah, Teemer's red, green, blue.
Okay, I tried.
So what do you think about the Sultai charm and the new template with the bullet points and everything? I'm actually a fan.
I have not seen
The only way they could make this easier for players who couldn't quite grasp the charms before is to have them just like the card to say, call a judge. Then you put your hand up and the judge like tells you how the card works. That's the only way they could make this easier.
There's less room for text on these now, right, compared to the old format?
Yes, that's the problem I see with it, that you're not able – you could probably do a two-liner, though, and still have it, but it won't look as good, and I don't know if they will start doing that now in the future.
So, I mean, the current one we have, the Soul Tie Charm, each of the three abilities is one line. Like, it seems like there's another spacer. You could have one of them that has two lines. I don't know. It does kind of limit the space, I think, going forward on charms.
Yeah, you would have to do, like, the last ability as a multi-line. Otherwise, you lose that coolness of the bullet points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. This card is sweet.
Or they can make the text smaller. Fair. Yeah. I'm already starting to brew with it in Legacy and Shardless Bug because you don't really like flipping off of an agent to a Golgari charm, and you already run that in the board. And this is, like, does most of the work that Golgari Charm does for you. Then missing the regenerate kind of sucks, but making up for it with the other two could be relevant. So, like,
Ryan, I just might actually have Eternal. Did you mean to say Shardless
Bug?
Jeskai? Soltai?
Soltai.
No, I'm still calling the Legacy deck.
Shardless Soltai, man. It's got alliteration.
Oh, no. It's not going to happen.
It's not happening.
So does Shit
Not
in
Legacy.
That's an alliteration also.
All right. I'm just trying to get into it. Trying to get into new wedges.
Don't stop trying to make it happen.
As long as people say Jeskai and not American, I'll play American control because these colors don't run.
My Amerikai.
American. Jeskai is stupid, but it still sounds less stupid than calling your deck American.
It's true.
I call my deck Merfolk. It's easy.
So speaking of Merfolk, how about we jump into these picks of the week?
It's time for the pick of the week.
Oh yeah.
That's a segue right there. That's good.
That was not a good segue.
Merfolk's my pick of the week, it is.
Alright, yeah.
I got a crazy pick of the week that you will know already if you read my article on Tuesday on the behind the paywall on QS, which is very few of you. But this is a card I wanted to think about how the fetch lands were going to affect modern by making decks that were not really quite getting there because their mana bases weren't as good as they could be. And one deck I looked at was Blue Black Mill, and that was a deck that never really quite got there. And when I was looking at Blue Black Mill deck lists, I saw a card that I didn't think about before. But this is, I'll tell you what it is, it's Archive Trap. Now, with more fetches and, you know, more decks that weren't fetching before, fetching a lot more now, Archive Trap is going to trigger a lot more often. So the decks that run Archive Trap get that, Polluted Delta, you know, so they can do their Blue Black Mill shenanigans. They can have their, discard spells and draw spells and what have you. And they can hit their, turn two Glimpse the Unthinkable predictably and all that kind of jazz, but Archive Trap is one of those cards that is a lot more than everybody thinks. No one thinks it's like a $3 to $5 card. Everyone thinks it's, you know, kind of like a buck or two because nobody ever sees anybody play an Archive Trap because they all get played on kitchen tables. But if more people are fetching, I think you're going to hit your Archive Trap a lot more often. And, it could even conceivably be in the sideboard for control mirrors because we've seen control mirrors mill each other out. And with, Polluted Delta and Flooded Strand both getting added to Modern, you know, the chances of a control deck being good are a lot better because the mana kind of sucked and Esper's not even really a deck. So for all those reasons, I think Archive Trap is a pretty good pickup at 3 to 5. I could see it going up, and it's going to go up over time regardless.
Do you really think that Blue Black Mill is going to be a thing or is a thing? I mean, it's always been fringy, like real fringy, but.
But I think if more people get into Modern, that's a good place to enter Modern. It's a real Dirtle deck for sure. But it's fun to play, and honestly, like, improving the mana base only improves the chances that someone looking to get into Modern for a couple $100, if you can buy your four Flooded Strands or your four Polluted Deltas for $40, you know, and improve the mana base that way and play some more basics as opposed to running, you know, four River of Tears and for the Dark Slick Shores yeah. and all that. So I don't know, like, I think Archive Trap has a lot going for it. And I think it, you know, it, what it is now, it's going to go up over time regardless. If it's not reprinted, and I don't think it will be. But I think it could spike sharply if it gets adopted, either because people play more mill or because people use mill as a strategy to win the control mirror. Because 13 cards right off the bat's a lot. And then if you start jacing or drown yarding them, you know, that could really get there.
Thoughts on Mind Funeral?
I think the reprint's still back slowly.
Yeah. It's like, not the $8 it was before Modern Masters, but it could get back.
Yeah, the only issue I have with mill, and like I was trying this out when I was goofing around with Modern Online. I mean, it's the same issue mill's always had, right? So like 15 of the cards in your deck do nothing to affect the board state. And at this point, like, you're trying to play a combo deck that's essentially like 15 cards short of being able to control or keep your opponent from doing anything. And in Modern, there's just like better combos to be doing that with. And beyond, you know, those cards being dead, you're also taking up a lot more spots to have those cards be dead than you are in, say, something like Pod.
I've definitely seen it steal games at like PTQs.
Yeah.
But it usually involves an unchecked Hedron Clark Crab, and then you Mind Funeral them, and all of a sudden they can't fetch their lands or can't fetch their Pod targets. But like,
oh, you got more fetches to make your crab better.
The list that we were playing around with like came like down to actually cutting a lot of those cards to the point where like you were just pretty much on glimpse and like breaking, entering. And that was about all you could afford. There was like, well, I can't remember what the other one card was, but you were essentially became a control deck that was just using mill as your win condition.
Was it your Mesmeric Orb? Because Mesmeric Orb is nutty.
Mesmeric Orb, like, I mean, there's that combo deck that runs that, but I don't know of anything that.
Mind Funerals are, no, I don't know. I've actually watched a fair amount of mill and modern. It's always just like a turn and a half slower than everything else.
Yeah, and that's like kind of the thing. Is like you're playing a combo that's not killing your opponent quickly, but at the same time also isn't really
stopping your opponent
from doing anything quickly. Like
you have literally unwinnable matchups against anyone playing Tron.
I don't think that matters a ton. Like I think the card will spike if it gets played in modern, but I think it's going to go up regardless. I think it's a real safe bet.
Yeah, no, it's definitely true.
This is a safe bet that's going to inch up over time and has a non-zero chance of spiking. So I think it's a good way to sock some money.
That's true.
And I literally cannot keep mill cards in my case. Like every time I get mill cards, they just disappear.
Yeah.
And these are casuals paying 15, 20 bucks for Glypsy Unthinkable. It's
nuts. You're right.
Yeah, and I mean, there's always going to be merits to that. So at the very least, like the cards going up over time, it's fairly safer regardless, right? So.
Yeah. All right. I'll jump. Well, did you guys, I know Ryan made Courser his pick a while back and we talked about Keranos last week and all of a sudden that card's like $17, and the foil's up to 80. So hopefully people got those if they needed them. So I mean, I think what we're seeing is standard movement. On cards right now. Mana Confluence has been moving. It seems like everyone is finally into that stage. Into that stage of kind of speculating. Everyone cares about standard again after not caring about it for so long. So I'm going to go in with one here, and that is...
You're stalling, man.
Yeah, I know. Come on.
I lost it.
All right, so my pick of the week is going to be.
I lost it. I don't know what happened.
My pick of the week is going to be a Modo only because fuck you, paper people, even though I'm going to join you with my new cube that I'm building. And yeah. So it's going to be Consoles Judgment. This is a conspiracy card, but it's also in Vintage Masters. So you might be able to actually get it as a conspiracy. I don't know how much it is in conspiracy, but online it's $1.50. And this card is played in Legacy decks. It's going to be played maybe in some Vintage, and you could have got it a little cheaper under $1, but I think, you know, as time goes on, because it's playable in these internal formats, this card will eventually become a $5, $6, $7, $8 card. It's just going to be a matter of time. So get in now at $1.50. I think you have a good opportunity long term on this card to make some money.
I found my card. I had it pulled up and then I went and looked at something else and lost it. Polymorphous Jest at about $1.50 right now.
This is you doubling down on Whelming Wave.
You do know we got the wrath you were looking for, right?
Yeah.
They confirmed that.
I agree with you. Polymorphous chess has been showing up in modern. Been inching up about 50, 60, 75 cents over the last couple weeks in standard. It's from M15, which we're done opening. We've seen what these things can do. And I understand that we have a 5-mana wrath now, and that's good. But turn four was already kind of iffy to basically play scry lands and then wrath on turn four. You certainly can't get away with doing that until turn five. You need something else. Polymorphous Jest, is insane in all those bug decks that were basically on the Prognostic Sphinx plan. It trumps your opponent's, Sphinxes and Coursers and everything. Like this card, if we get into blue-based mid-range battles, this card is a giant blowout in the way that a wrath is not. And I think it has the potential to easily double from, $1.50 to $3-4.
It plays with Jeskai, right?
It just plays with everything. Like, think about that, those bug decks from the Pro Tour. Like, those games would so often come down to, well, I've got a Courser, and you've got a Courser, and I've got a Sphinx, and you've got a Sphinx. Like, man, this card just blows those games open.
At $2, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to get any bigger.
I like it at bulk.
It's M15.
Yeah, at bulk, I like a lot. It's 30
cents. I like it like $1.50 nutteries. I think it'll go 3-4 easy.
Okay. I mean, but at four, if you're buying them at $2.
Well, I think you need to be buying under two and you need it to go to four and trade them out or, get $3 on them. Like, I don't think it's the highest upside pick in the world, but you never know. This could just be, like I said, if it becomes those mid-range grindy mirrors, based in blue, this is a card that blows them open.
Yeah, it's a very powerful card.
So wins the game on the spot most of the time. Like, it's a combat trick. Like,
yeah,
addition to basically a falter, where you can suddenly fly over them or make them chump block, like.
Any card that's this powerful warrants a look at. And
not to mention, it has seen some play in modern.
So, pick a foils?
I guess I'd rather just get a bunch of cheap ones at $1 or $2 and trade.
$5 foils. All day long. So what's your pick, Ryan?
All right, so mine's even cheaper than Polymorphous Jest, is a mythic, and I think has, I don't know what the ceiling is. I don't want to compare it to anything else, but we've obviously talked about the souls before, and this week, with all the spoilers coming out and everything, I finally completely flipped my opinion on the souls. Like, not on the souls overall, but, like, which souls are really good, and I'm all about the Soul of Ravnica. There's going to be a card. I know I'm going to get yelled at for saying this. This card is not replacing Sphinx's Revelation. I understand. However, this card is very good, and there are going to be plenty of times where you're going to pay 7 and draw 3 cards from this, and you're going to feel great about it out of your graveyard. And
there you go. That's where this was going.
Yep. This card is very, very good. I'm all about it. Every deck list I'm trying to come up with right now seems to start and end with this guy in Chromanticore, which is really killing me. But I wish it wasn't real life, but I think it is. Like, I really think 5-color control is here.
I think, you're not at $1.20 in paper and it's $1 in paper. I don't think that's a bad bet. Even though
it's folk mythic, you can actually sell it back to
it was
a buy list for pretty much the same.
It did spike on Moto the other day. It was 70 cents and now it's $1. So who knows?
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm just going to point out that this was a giveaway promo for,
that's fine. It's a mythic. If it's going to get played, there's no way it's not going to go up to at least 5.
Yeah.
Like, if this card sees any play at all, it's $5, bare minimum.
I understand.
In the graveyard, I mean, that's pretty nuts. In the graveyard, all of a sudden, one of your cards from the graveyard, it gives you +3.
Like, well, and what we've been playing around with, it's all theory at this point, obviously, until we have deck lists. But there's times when, like, I really want to play Chromanticore, obviously. Like, I think that card's nuts, and there's the mana base to support it. Like, it's not Baneslayer.
Suck it, Jason.
It's not Baneslayer Angel, but, like, it fills that role pretty well, and casting on 5 has not been an issue, like, at all, ever. You have Kerry Tid Courser, like, your mana base is fantastic. So there's these times, though, where, like, you're playing against control, and you get a chance to, like, bestow a Chromanticore, and there's times where you just put it on a Kerry Tid, because then your opponent has a really tough time dealing with it. They either get to, like, Wrath the Kerry Tid, or they have to like deal with that card in particular. The new Vindicate definitely hurts the strategy a little bit.
So does the five mana wrath that also.
Right, and neither one of those cards were out when I was like first looking at this. But then, so like the way we were theoretically beating the control matchups is like you just activate this out of the graveyard and you're drawing five cards before your opponent can do anything about it. Because like even if you just have enough mana to bestow it one turn, you don't. There's like not a lot of ways, or there wasn't a lot of ways. Now there's two to be able to deal with it before your opponent could draw the five cards. And so it was definitely powerful enough that for seven mana, it's, like I said, it's not Sphinx's Revelation. It actually draws you more cards right at that point, though, because you're also not using a card out of your hand to draw those cards. And it's a 6-6 flyer, which is never terrible late game. Like, once you've run both people out of resources, sometimes just slamming a 6-6 will get you there. So, like, the guy's body is relevant, and he's also a fine draw engine. And I think most of the time he's going to be able to draw you three cards, and that's fine for the mana investment, considering you don't actually have to have the card in your hand. It's not really a dead draw because like it's still a 6-6. You don't have a problem discarding it because you get the secondary effect out of it. Like there's not a lot of downside to this guy if the deck is there for him.
What are you discarding it to?
I don't know. Like, but if Necromancer stockpile is going to be a thing, then obviously we're discarding cards.
I guess.
Yeah, like I said, we don't know enough of the cards for me to like.
You're
say,
deep
like,
in the tank this early in the season.
Yeah, I really. Well, this is how it always starts. Like you have to.
Well, he's
if
got
you,
the
if
cards.
If you don't start evaluating the cards right now, like you're going to miss the cards when all the new exciting shiny stuff comes out.
I mean, he has See the Unwritten. He could just throw this in the graveyard along
now,
with
that's
seven.
That's a card I want to play.
And then all of a sudden you cast this. Oh goodness. We'll see. I like it. I like where Ryan's brain is going. He's doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing. This broken
finding the crazy stuff.
Yeah, the crazy stuff.
It sounds really crazy, but like, I mean, I've been saying that this mirrors what the five color control deck looks like. And we were just talking about how Baneslayer like replaced that Broodmate Dragon, right? Like this card is Baneslayer were the plus one, although now with the new wrath, it hurts it a little bit for sure. The plus one was actually more relevant than Baneslayer's plus one at the time, I think, although hers did have times when it was relevant in the format. But the bestow ability, like sometimes you're just like, I have a courser, and now I have a 6-8 courser that's gaining me 6 life right now, and then you can't attack back into it.
I feel like your opponent's done something wrong at that point.
Yeah. Not really. It's not that late in the game. Like, that's turn 5, turn 6.
Well, we'll find out. You have to brew it up. We're going to get some streaming going. We're going to see Ryan
I've got the cards on Modo. Well, if I could stream from version 4, I'd be all about it, I guess.
Oh, don't get started on that.
Yeah. Like, that's my current holdup. If somebody can figure out how to... I just need to go buy a new laptop is really the reality. My laptop's... like going anyway.
With all the beautiful things that they got going on with these new Magic sets, the new frames, the
don't do it.
Everything.
Don't go down this rabbit hole.
No, for real though. Why can't Modo just step up to the same level?
All right, so Marcel, here's my theory. Modo's got really quiet all of a sudden. I think we're going to see something major in the next 3 to 4 months. Like I'm hoping by year's end. I'm going to give them till year's end. We're going to see something major where even if they're not just saying, hey, here's your new client today. They're going to show us something cool. And they know. They have to know how frustrated people are. And they can't let it sit there like the way it is. Because they're going to keep playing. But your new growth in Modo has got to be just like tanking. Because you have all these people who are currently playing Modo talking shit about it. Well, like any new player that hears that is going to be less likely to get into it. And they have to fix that. They
and
can't
streaming.
Leave it the way it
you got to think, why, I don't know why they don't integrate the platform Modo somehow is streaming. Like you see other
no
games
game
that.
No game does that.
No, they don't have something with that League of Legends doing that.
No, you just stream League of Legends. That setup comes on the client side, like your streaming client.
Will they make the game so that you can actually stream it instead of?
Well, that's a different question. But like in terms of things wrong with Modo and things fixable, I think rewriting your program so that it uses less system resources is probably more difficult to fix than some of the other issues they have.
Yeah, but multiple. We're not going down a rabbit hole. I'm just disappointed with Modo. That's all. I'm really frustrated.
I didn't mean to bring it up. I still have hope. Like I said, end of the year. Like I just bought into standard on there, so like I'm sure hoping it gets better because I really would like to stream.
Yeah.
But yeah, the way it is now, it's just like it's not possible. I tried for 2 weeks straight, and it's not gonna happen. Not until the update or I get a new computer or something. Although from what I understand, like, it's even less about the computer and some people's just like version 4 doesn't like streaming, I guess. I don't know.
No, it is. It's harder to, because the windows that how it pops up, it doesn't work with some of the streamers as far as recognizing that it's inside the game. And it has layering of the windows and everything. It just is just not very compatible with that.
I was watching LSV stream Vintage earlier. He had it figured out. It's possible.
I mean, he's also the luckiest man on earth, so heaven forbid anything go wrong for him. But don't get me started on LSV.
It's a sound point you make.
I mean, I've watched him stream.
You make your
it
own
really
luck,
just
man.
Makes me want to, like, tear my hair out.
You make
he's
your
just
own
like,
luck.
Oh, well, I mean, this guy's got us here. And then he's like, oh, look, my one outer there. That's great. And then the next turn, he just proceeds to, like, rip, 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 bomb, 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 and, like, crush people. I'm like, man, I remember when Magic was easy.
I'm telling you, man, I think it's the way he plays it off that he has that reputation. So I've watched him get mana screwed, too.
Oh, no, I know he does. But, like, it's just frustrating. Because, like, you feel at a certain point, like, it's just an insurmountable, like, luck factor somewhere in there.
It's
I don't
possible
know.
That maybe the drafts where he drafts a mediocre deck and then gets double mana screwed in round one don't get posted online.
I mean, that's quite possible.
I'm just saying.
I mean, I feel like I would post those, though, because, like, people need to know you're a real-life person.
I mean, honestly, he probably does. But it's
not I don't know. Either that or he really just doesn't have those games. You don't know.
Shameless accusations you guys are doing that's going to bring the downfall to our show.
Oh.
Ellis
no, I mean,
awesome.
I respect
I don't know what
him
saying,
as a player.
But...
I just am very jealous as someone trying to start grinding again of how insanely lucky he appears from the outside. That's all I'll say about it.
Right. I'm telling you, man, it's the fact that whenever he does get lucky, he's like, he plays it off perfectly, and that's why he has that reputation.
No, I get it. I get it. Doesn't mean it makes me any less salty about it.
All right. Well, let's get the salt out of here.
Yep.
Because we got to end the episode before, you know, we get fired by the boss. I think we're past our contract time. So tune in next week for Brainstorm Brewery, episode 114, with some more spoilers and maybe some guests or something.
Or something.
Adios, muchachos.
Peace.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.